Welcome to Puro Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, Metro columnist, and I'm joined by
business editor and columnist Greg Jefferson,
investigative reporter Brian Chasmo.
And we're back this week. We took a week off from the podcast, and a lot of stuff happened while we were taking a break. As most of you know, most of the Texas House Democrats bolted the state last Monday during this special session as a way to break quorum and block for the second time election legislation that they're unhappy with from Republicans in the legislature. This happened at the end of the regular session, and as we all expected, we have a special session where Governor Greg Abbott included what he would call election integrity legislation, which Democrats view as voter suppression legislation. It's on the agenda. We're in a situation now where the Texas House Democrats are in Washington, D.C. trying to make their case to Democrats in Congress to pass federal legislation that would supersede any restrictions that would happen in Texas or in other states. So that's happening. We've also learned that five of the Texas House Democrats in D.C. have contracted COVID-19. At least one of them that we know of is from San Antonio. Trey Martinez Fisher, the dean of the San Antonio delegation, announced on Sunday that he had tested positive. So this is all happening. We also know that as this plays out, Governor Greg Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick are already plan to call another special session in August if this this quorum break continues for the next few weeks. So Greg, I wanted to start with you and get your sense. We know that what the issues are as far as the election legislation, but when you look at what the Texas House Democrats are hoping to achieve, what is the end game as far as you can see with this move to go to DC?
I mean, I think they're hoping for national Democrats to really step up. I mean, yeah. whether to give them a lot of air cover, at minimum, if not actual federal legislation to kind of buttress voting rights, at least to give them some shielding with the Texas lawmakers constituents, just to have the president, to have, Vice President Harris taking up their cause in a more kind of fulsome way. I think that's their hope. I mean, practically speaking, I think some kind of voting bill is, or some kind of voting legislation is inevitable, I think. Mm-hmm. Is that your view? I mean, do you think this is a lot of noise, and at the end of the day, there actually will be a bill that Abbott signs?
Yeah, I don't see any way around it, really. I mean, Abbott will keep calling special sessions indefinitely. And if you look at where the leverage is, I mean, Abbott can, the Republican leaders in the state are kind of, they're sitting comfortably here in Texas, and it's not really any, it's obviously annoying to them to have this thing stretch out, but the Texas House Democrats, they're basically separated from their families. Their funding could run out at some point. They've gotten some help from Beth O'Rourke's organization, Powered by People, gotten a little bit of help from Willie Nelson. But, this is their funds are not unlimited, and they can only do this for so long. And we've seen that in the past when we've had quorum breaks. I mean, Brian, what do you, when you look at this, I mean, I guess when we look at the possibility of federal legislation that would block something happening in Texas, I mean, you're really relying on Democrats in the House, in the Senate, being willing to abandon the filibuster, and you're primarily talking about Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema being willing to do that when they've shown they haven't seemed willing in the past. I mean, what do you think the odds are on this?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like it appears to be an act of desperation, but sending a strong signal to, senators in Washington to help. It's a SOS, you know.
Yeah.
That's why they fled to Washington, was to send that signal. But like Greg, I agree. It seems pretty unlikely, and the determination of Greg Abbott to follow through on this appears to be great. And at the very least, it's a they're waging a political fight that is also sending a signal to voters.
Right.
And, drawing a line in the sand and saying, this is what matters to us as Democrats, when it's time to vote again.
Yeah. And Greg Abbott, he's a lot of the Trumpian base in Texas looks on Greg Abbott with a lot of suspicion. They don't trust him. And a lot of that has to do with the mask mandates and how he handled the early phase of the pandemic. They felt he was overly restrictive, forcing them at various points to wear masks and engage in shutdowns. So he's got a lot to prove with this kind of far right part of the base. And just given that reality, I can't see him giving up on this. There will be a bill.
That's right.
He will keep them coming back.
Yeah, and he's got challenges in the primary. He's got a couple of challengers, including Alan West, the former Florida congressman who was the state Republican Party chair for about a year, and he was very critical, as you point out, of Abbott. In when it came down to mask mandates and so on, he hasn't been. He's West so far as a gubernatorial candidate has focused most of his criticism on Democrats. But if Abbott doesn't follow through with this, or if he shows any weakness on the voting bill, that's going to be big fodder for and West. Really,
sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say this isn't much of a stretch for Texas Republicans. I mean, they've been flogging the voter fraud narrative for many, many years now.
That's right.
Despite the lack of any evidence for widespread voter fraud. So this is a natural
mention. It's always worth pointing out, too, when we're talking about this, because it sometimes, gets lost in the daily mix. But I mean, what's underpinning this whole thing is the idea among, a lot of Republicans that, the presidency was stolen from Donald Trump through voter fraud. Like that is the reason we're in this position today. Like that really deeply held, totally bogus belief. It's why we're here. And it's, I think we just constantly have to keep coming back to that. I mean, to understand that is the context in which, we're seeing this legislation come up in this, the Republican drive to pass it.
And it's, the majority of Republicans must realize that that's a false narrative. It's just a. Am I giving them too much credit?
I don't think so. I really don't think so.
I think opening to exploit something for gain.
Yeah, I mean, I think when Republican voters tell pollsters that they think the election was stolen from Donald Trump, I think they really mean it.
Yeah, and I think there's a mix as far as the Republican, lawmakers. I think there are some who deep down know that the narrative that Trump had the election stolen from him is a complete lie, but they're just kind of playing along or kind of not saying too much about it. And then obviously there are many, and we're looking at you, Louis Gohmert, believe absolutely that Trump had the election stolen from him, the facts really don't matter there. But one of the things that happened too is that and this quorum break is really, this is happening in the context of similar election laws that are being introduced or passed in various states, including Georgia, which was a crucial swing state in 2020 that Joe Biden barely won over Donald Trump. So it's happening in that context, that the sense among Democrats that this is kind of a coordinated effort to not only propagate the big lie that Trump had the election stolen from him, but also to say whatever aspects of the voting process were beneficial to Joe Biden, we want to kind of cut into them. Former San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro, who just last week we learned that he is now officially a political analyst for MSNBC. And so he's been appearing on MSNBC a lot over the last few days. He's referred to this Texas voting bill as point shaving. And in the sense that, you know, when you have point shaving scandals in sports, it often involves, gamblers or organized crime figures. They might pay one player. It might just be paying one player to just play a little, just don't play quite as well as you normally would, and just do enough to maybe shave some points off
Gilbert, are you saying it's that they're cheating?
I think what they're doing is they're looking.
Are you saying they're cheating, Gilbert?
I think what I would say is that it's kind of saying these are some different areas where Democrats tend to do well. Let's just kind of shave a little bit of the turnout off in some of these areas, and maybe just kind of create a chilling effect for some of these things. And one of the things, obviously, is mail voting. They've made a big issue of mail voting. We had last year in Bexar County, we had Justin Rodriguez, the county commissioner, saying, "Let's send out applications for ballots to anyone who already meets the criteria. If you're 65 or over, or you're disabled, or you're going to be out of the county, let's make it easier for people. Send those applications out." It's really not a big deal. We're not talking even about sending ballots out. We're just sending applications so that if somebody wants to is interested in voting by mail, they fill it out. The county elections office still has to look at that application, decide if the person meets the requirements, and then they send them a ballot. So it's really hard to make the argument that simply sending out unsolicited applications, that's a problem. If anybody has been to the Bexar County Elections Office, the application is there. You just have to print it out. So the county was just trying to make it easier. Many candidates, Greg Abbott, in 2018, sent out applications for mail ballots to Republican voters. That isn't really a big deal. But one of the things that we see in this bill is preventing counties from sending unsolicited applications for mail ballots. People now have to request the application, and in the application, then they request the ballot. Just make it a little bit harder. Again, you're kind of shaving a little bit off the turnout. You're finding different. You know, they're banning drive-through voting. They're banning 24-hour voting, which some of the counties had last year. Bexar County had some 24-hour sites. So it's just kind of trying to kind of cut into whatever advantages they think Democrats could have.
Now, I'd be curious what y'all think about just the idea that, they would also be shaving into Republican votes. I mean, how solid is this idea that this will mostly affect Democrats?
What do you think about that, Greg?
Well, I mean, I think most of these restrictions are kind of bracketed to urban counties. And, if you look at how, and it's not an exact thing, obviously, I think there will be some Republican voters who are kind of discouraged or dissuaded from voting if these, restrictions actually go in the books. But generally speaking, I mean, if you look at, these are going to impact mostly, Harris, Dallas County, Tarrant County, Travis, Bexar, all the big counties. And those go, generally go Democratic.
Right. Absolutely.
You're talking about Democratic majorities. So it's not exact, but I think it's going to have an outsized impact on Democratic candidates, just because, is particularly in statewide elections, obviously, because this is where they go for votes,
That's right.
Big cities in Texas.
Yeah. And I think Democrats have just kind of worked harder at the mail balloting you know, process in recent years. I mean, last year I wrote about the fact and you know, George W. Bush got elected president in 2000 because of mail voting, regardless of whether, you know, people thought that there were some questionable ballots in Florida. You know, ultimately what decided the election for him was the fact that the Republican Party of Florida had this massive get out the mail vote effort in which they enlisted then Governor Jeb Bush, the brother of the presidential candidate. So mail voting has benefited Republicans in many instances, but I think particularly in recent years, Democrats have put more work into it, more effort. And as you said, you know, the big counties where this is probably going to be a factor, they're Democratic counties. I think one other aspect of this bill that I think really should concern everybody is that it tends to empower partisan poll watchers, and poll watchers have a role to play. Each party send someone in to a polling site just to monitor things, to make sure that nothing bad happens, but they're very restricted in terms of their activities. And if they see something that looks wrong, they report it. And, but I think there is a concern that we're going to create a situation here where we're going to have poll watchers, harassing voters and, kind of getting in the way of voters and creating some level of intimidation. And I think that that's something that really is a serious issue. And I think that something we really have to be concerned about. So, you know, the last thought on this is just, you know, that for Texas Democrats to ultimately be able to stop this legislation, they're really relying on Joe Manchin. And I think that he, has made it clear he opposes getting rid of the filibuster. He also came down to Texas. I think this was really deflating for a lot of Texas Democrats. He came down to Texas over the weekend and had like a fundraiser with Republicans. And I think that there was a feeling among, this is after meeting with you know, members of the Texas House delegation on voting rights issues. So I think that there's really a lot of you know, concern about whether it's going to be possible to get anything passed on the federal level that would supersede this.
And, you know, I called the Democrats fleeing to Washington an act of desperation, but stepping back a little bit more, perhaps the legislation here in Texas by Republicans is also an act of desperation because they see the writing on the wall in terms of demographics and future elections.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Joe Biden lost by, you know, 5.something%. Hillary Clinton, 4 years earlier, I think, lost by about 9%. If you go back to Barack Obama's election campaigns, I mean, he was, you know, losing by much larger figures. I mean, the deficit has been shrinking. We saw how Beth O'Rourke put a scare into Ted Cruz in 2018. There, Democrats have not seen things shift as fast as they wanted or in as sort of a linear a fashion as they wanted, but there's certainly evidence that things here have been moving in their direction. And I think that you know, this is part of what's happening here with this bill. Wanted to move on to a local issue which got a lot of attention this past week. We learned that Shirley Gonzalez, who spent 8 years on the city council, just recently was term limited out, has applied for the chairmanship of the San Antonio Housing Commission. And apparently, Mayor Ron Nuremberg is going to announce his decision sometime this week. And as soon as the word got out about this, we saw a lot of pushback from affordable housing activists, a lot of concern because Shirley Gonzalez has tended to, in her support for development on the West Side. I think many activists believe that she has, that she's not really taken the issue of housing affordability seriously. She favored, a project which would involve a private developer, demolishing the Olazan courts and having mixed income, housing there, which is a big red flag for people because this is, you know, a historic public housing complex here in San Antonio on the West Side. She also came out as a member of the San Antonio Housing Trust, a public facility corporation, was very supportive of a development plan for the Friedrich Building on the east side, and got into kind of a real conflict with her colleague, John Courage, when he raised questions about whether there was going to be enough affordable housing there. So, Greg, I wanted to ask you about this because, I mean, I think underlying all this, I mean, Shirley Gonzalez, I think, comes from the perspective that, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. I think there's a question, I mean, among a lot of activists, whether, you know, we've seen in Austin how, you know, a lot of people have basically been priced out of living there, and, we're not in that at that point yet in San Antonio, but I guess I wanted to ask you, like, how real you think these concerns are.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a collision of a couple of things. One is, you know, Shirley Gonzalez was never shy about the lack of development on the West Side and in District 5, which she represented, as you said, for 8 years. You know, she talked a lot about how she would love to get you know, really kind of catalytic projects going on the West Side. It's just that, you know, developers, for a lot of reasons, just were never particularly interested. Mm-hmm. So I think with Shirley Gonzalez, there was a sense that, you know, if you were a developer and you showed any interest in a project in District 5, her first response would be, how can I help? Sure. Not necessarily tell me about your project and what it would mean for affordable housing area. Like, mm-hmm. I think she was just very receptive to getting any kind of growth going on the West Side. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's a concern for housing activists who are kind of watching this other trend, which is, and this is not necessarily what's happening right now in District 5. But it could at some point, you know, where you're seeing really quickly redeveloping, you know, kind of older legacy neighborhoods that are, you know, seeing a lot of their properties bought up, rehabilitated, rehabbed, and then flipped, bringing in kind of more well-to-do, often younger buyers, sure. and creating pressure on existing homeowners, driving up property values, which then, you know, drives up property tax bills and kind of really, really stressing older homeowners to the point where sometimes they have to sell. We're not seeing this very much in San Antonio at this point, but we are beginning to see it some in close-in neighborhoods around downtown. This is... You know, this is happening in a really big way in Austin right now. And that's what a lot of people are watching. They're concerned that what's transpiring in Austin, this housing crisis, could be coming to San Antonio. I think that's overblown. I mean, you know, the moment Google, Facebook, Tesla, and Oracle built huge operations in San Antonio, and the population grows as quickly here as it does in Austin, then we can worry about it. We're just economically not in the same situation as in Austin, and that the housing crisis, if it comes to San Antonio, is in no way going to be as severe as it is there. However, you know, this is a fast growing city. You know, we are seeing you know, an influx of young professionals, and we are going to feel this kind of pressure in older mm-hmm. neighborhoods. And mm-hmm. I think that's what activists are reacting to with Shirley Gonzalez's application for this seat. They kind of want to head that off.
One of the things that's come up in Austin, I mean, is not only the fact that as you said, you've got like high tech companies coming in, and you know that the influx of those employees coming in. But also, I mean, I think there's a sense that Austin didn't do enough, maybe resisted, you know, creating enough housing stock there, and particularly housing stock, affordable housing stock, and that now there's just such a shortage that the demand so exceeds the supply that is also creating a lot of stress in that city. I mean, where do you think San Antonio is exactly. As far exactly. as just the amount of housing that is available and well, whether that's going to be
going well, no, I mean, actually, yeah, that is, there aren't a lot of new houses being built. This is changing. You know, there was, you know, until a year or so ago, you know, the amount of new housing stock coming on the market was really paltry. Mm-hmm. And with demand really picking up, I think that's starting to change. But yeah, like right now, they're just, look, I mean, there aren't enough new homes being built to satisfy demand. It is a total seller's market. Yeah. Like if you own a home and, you know, you're putting it on the market, you're totally in control. I mean, you'll have plenty of bidders. And if you're a developer with, you know, if you've got a new home to put it on the market, I mean, you really are in the driver's seat. But yeah, there just aren't enough. There aren't enough houses available, simply. And you know, it's not clear that a year from now, even with all of the new construction underway, mm-hmm. whether there's going to be enough a year from now or 2 years from now. I mean, we could still be in this really stark, or you know, really highly competitive market where sellers basically control everything.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to wrap things up there. Hope everybody's doing well, and we'll be back with you next week. Take care.